Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
We're back for another Not a Thing podcast, and no guest again this week, but a lot of topics, so we should jump right into it. We got a lot of good stuff this week.
Not that we were turned down for a guest, we just didn't invite anybody.
Yeah, we both had kind of a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah.
Mostly preparing for Thanksgiving, at least on my side of things. I don't know about you.
Well, I mean, I did have to watch some Doctor Who repeatedly.
Excellent.
To celebrate the 50th anniversary.
So is that like a time loop kind of thing?
Like watching it over and over again? Yeah, I guess so. It's timey, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, as they say.
Excellent. Well, Thanksgiving is coming up. It's in a short, like, 2 days. Greetings to everyone listening to this on the car ride to family or whatnot. Hopefully you're going to a stress-less kind of environment for Thanksgiving. But one place that is a kind of stressful environment, apparently, is Black Friday, which I don't know when if we should even call it Black Friday anymore.
it's bleeding over into Thanksgiving itself. Does that make it like Brown Thursday? Because the turkeys and the
that works.
Yeah,
that
works.
Yeah,
Brown,
I mean, it's
Thursday, not a thing.
Yeah. Thanksgiving should have its own whole day. I think it doesn't. We don't need to give Black Friday even more of a day. I don't know. I've never been able to take advantage nor really want to take advantage of any of the actual Black Friday deals when I've done stuff. I don't know about you.
I've only done it once, and that was a few years ago. I got a Xbox 360.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But I've since, you know, decided to refrain from such activities in the future. I don't want to get involved with that stuff, man.
Does it I don't know, is it really that good of a deal?
In retrospect, not really. Definitely not worth getting up at 4 a.m. for.
Right. Was it at all dangerous?
No. I went to the where was it? I think it was a Target in South San Jose, so it was pretty low key.
Well, that's good. No violence.
No, I did not end up as a statistic on Black Friday deathcount.com.
Yeah, we just described that website to a T. It looks like if you go to it, it's essentially just reports of both injuries and deaths in that just related to Black Friday. People getting trampled or being restrained, but also things like people actively hurting each other in order to get deals and stuff. And yeah, I think not only is, you know, Black Friday not a thing from a like crazy commercialism standpoint, from a let's hurt other human beings standpoint, it's also not a thing.
Well, let's take the day, one day a year that you're supposed to be thankful for what you have, and then just totally erase all that goodwill the next day.
Yeah, that pretty much is what it sounds like. So
unfettered capitalism's the best.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I'd heard of kind of in relation to Black Friday, I mean, some people are talking about like Cyber Monday, which I think is kind of dumb.
That's what everyone knows, that's where the real deals are.
Yeah. But I think the one that I think I would support is Small Business Saturday, which, I mean, that's fine that they want to make it kind of rhyme or have alliteration, I guess, for Saturday. But support small businesses. I think of any businesses that need kind of support, those are the ones that you should be patronizing, not like big box stores and necessarily internet businesses, which are often related to or owned by big box store kind of people. So,
well, I will say Cyber Monday is probably safer than Black Friday. You're not going to get pepper sprayed at your computer. Unless you want to. That's up to you.
Oh, we'll talk about that later in the show.
I'm not gonna judge. It's your journey.
Well, another thing that kind of comes out of Cyber Monday and kind of doing things on the computer is an article that we found about using periods in kind of everyday communication online nowadays. I say nowadays with that kind of lilt of you crazy kids, because it's mostly based around kind of conventions in texting and IM culture, which is that you don't necessarily add punctuation to stuff because you don't have to. It's like because you're taking essentially, and they said this really nicely in the article, you're taking a speaking medium where there are pauses and stuff like that, and you're kind of using written language conventions like, commas and periods where you don't necessarily need to. So IM is like trying to emulate more of a conversational tone, but what can happen is when you do use punctuation, especially periods, according to the article, that it can be a lot harsher than was probably intended.
Well,
I don't know, do
there's no room for tone when you're typing in text. If you're texting someone or IMing someone,
Right.
that all any punctuation is going to give it that much more power because it's taken more literally.
Right.
That's the
Right.
only way you can, influence that subtext.
And tone is one of those things that it's very difficult to do with a text only kind of medium, especially like because you can't say things sarcastically.
That's you're really crippling yourself if you can't use sarcasm.
Right, there's no emoticon for I'm being sarcastic. At least that as far as I know.
That is why business transactions and relationship conversations should only occur face to face or on the phone with human voices, not via text.
I actually agree with that. I think communicating especially matters those kinds of matters on the phone or in person is a thing.
Text is for facts, not for feelings.
Ooh, I like that. That's good. Is that yours?
I just made it up right now,
That's
unless it's
great.
something I read somewhere, but
That's great. That should be a thing.
I'm taking credit. Taking credit for it. It's a thing.
Cool. I think one of the other things in the article is that like commas and other punctuation don't necessarily have that kind of emotional impact as a period because the period kind of signifies like a finality in the statement. And they had a couple examples which I thought were pretty good, kind of right for how they how it can be, misconstrued if you say something, with a period and one without. And I mean, I notice it in even in emails. Like sometimes people email with kind of shorter things. It's very much, at least at my work, kind of a like let's use email like texting. So they'll do messages where the only text is in the subject line, and they'll end the subject line with like the letters EOM as an end of message, so you know not to click all the way through the mail and then read the mail. Which I find kind of annoying, but I see how people like that because they want the immediacy of text, but not everyone is using any kind of system, at least at my work. Especially recently, we use Microsoft Link or Communicator or whatever it's called nowadays, and it was actually down briefly, and so the only messages people were doing were texting style messages, over over email. And it's also become kind of in vogue to do the, what's it called? I guess it came from the David Allen getting things done kind of methodology, and merging with a like zero inbox kind of talk about, like, you know, so people will use mail as a, you know, very like task oriented kind of thing, and less for kind of conversation and longer form communication. So I think it is moving in that direction of like, let's just get the communication faster, and, you know, losing punctuation is definitely related to that. And so when you do see punctuation, it can be very jarring.
Yeah, and why use a period when you could just write LOL? Which I refuse to. I still don't ever use LOL. I will type a ha ha.
Yeah, I'm a ha ha or heh heh kind of person.
Oh yeah.
Something invoking a little more than LOL, but
If I'm feeling puckish, a hee hee, but never an LOL.
Oh, it's good. I mean, I like the what is it? At one point, you know, it was really funny to do what was it? Just the ridiculously long kind of ones, like ROFLMAO, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I never got into that. I the most I would do was LOL at that point, but I'm kind of backing off that too. Because when I text or instant message, I actually tend to use full punctuation. And I think, you know, you have to be kind of one side or the other on that, because if you are in the middle, like in this article says, you can be accidentally too harsh or too kind of too final about saying stuff. I don't know. It's, I think as things go, it's not that big of a deal. Especially if we use the facts and not feelings mantra from the Brendan Wanger Not a Thing podcast.
Yeah, facts from like feelings. 5 minutes ago.
Oh, that's great. Well, I think for longer communication, I don't know. I still like email. I still like using email for longer form texts and stuff. Although what I'm noticing more and more is kind of the need to encrypt your text, encrypt your messages or anything.
Encrypt
like that.
Everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's become kind of a thing recently, right? I mean, only because if the NSA is looking, why make it so much easier for them to kind of, you know, jump into your mail and learn stuff about you? And that goes for not just the government, but like companies too, right? I mean, that's kind of a, you know, I think there's definitely a pendulum swing back towards kind of having personal information be personal. Whether that's necessarily possible or not is something else, given the amount of kind of infiltration of you know, that kind of thing. But what is interesting to me is there was a good article about cryptography recently, and kind of a new system for deriving keys. And the article talks about cryptography as a whole, but kind of coming from the point of view of the current state of like public and private key cryptography. And it does a good job of explaining that and how that works. And it goes so far as to make do the math essentially at a very base level to just show how that works. And then goes into kind of what they think is the next generation of cryptography, which is elliptical curve cryptography, which I really like. I mean, I'm a I guess I'm kind of an old school math nerd, so which I guess is just an old school nerd.
Nerd classic.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you don't really need that much of any further specialization of the term nerd in that respect. So the short form is that to do Cryptography currently, I mean, if you're doing the traditional, I guess they're called RSA or the other one was Diffie-Hellman, named after the guys that figured it out. You're doing cryptography where you take two prime numbers, really big prime numbers, and multiply them together in order to make your key. And the thing that makes that difficult is that while it's easy to multiply two numbers together, it's hard to figure out what numbers come from a big number. So if the key is this really big number, trying to figure out the two numbers that made it up to multiply is difficult. And so that's what the system is based on, is that it's very difficult to make guess those numbers. And so it's not impossible though, as long as people are writing software to write algorithms to factor numbers, it can be done. But the a different way of picking kind of a very large number is to use an equation with like a essentially a variable, like a cube variable, something to the third, and that's what's in this. There's actually two variables involved, and one's to the third and one's to the second power. And just the fact of using all of that means that it's a less predictable algorithm or a less predictable line when you draw it. And you use points on that line to generate your key. And so from a just purely random number point of view, if you try and plot points kind of in a space, they can be anywhere. And the fact that they're related by a curve is much harder to derive than if it were like a straight line, obviously. But if it were like I guess an elliptical curve, it's more complex to derive it, and so it's harder to do that than it is to figure out what two numbers multiply to make a bigger number. Did I lose everybody just now?
Whoa.
Is that the sound of our listenership switching over to a different podcast?
How did this get made is a great podcast. I think it's on Earwolf. That was the sound of my brain sputtering as it tried to comprehend what you were saying. Me no
Well,
math good.
the nice thing about the article is that it does kind of take it slow. It's in three sections. So the first section is that, the multiplying one, the second section is the curve one, and then the third section is why it matters. And it's pretty good as these things go. It comes from Ars Technica, which is a blog that I love for kind of big nerdy stuff like that. So
It's worth the read.
But maybe we should move over to something that's a little easier to understand.
I don't want to say more in my wheelhouse, but like easier to comprehend.
So, this is more apparently in the entire internet's wheelhouse, because it's a subject near and dear to everyone in the internet, and that is healthcare. Universal healthcare is here. Obamacare is around for everyone, at least to some degree. The Affordable Care Act, not exactly universal in the ways that I think we've talked about that we would enjoy. But anyway, one of the big deals with Obamacare, as I'm sure everyone has heard, is that the website is having trouble, and a lot of the trouble is just based around it's hard to make it work for the number of people that want it to work. And specifically, they're talking about just there's so
User
many.
load.
Yeah, it's just a, it sounds like it's a pure server load kind of issue. And who knows more about server load than I think the companies that essentially invented the internet, and that is porn companies. So a company, I think it's Pornhub was the one,
Yes, it
and
was Pornhub.com.
we don't necessarily
Not a
have to link
sponsor.
them in
No,
the show notes.
let's not.
people are kind of torn over this issue. Like, well, maybe not that torn. I think the official word is that, yeah, let's not enlist Pornhub.com's help in figuring out the Obamacare server situation. And I mean, I think it sounded like, you know, when you put aside the kind of silly jokingness of it, it does sound like they have a point. I mean, there's definitely server problems. People that work in companies that, you know, you want a lot of uptime have a lot of skills for dealing with that. And Pornhub.com is essentially volunteering their engineers to make it work. And I think, outright dismissing it, I think from a PR point of view, it might be a little kind of challenging, but I think outright dismissing it, is, I don't know.
That's weird. Indicative of the problem itself. Yeah. Not understanding technology.
And, you know, there are definitely smart people working in government somewhere. I mean, I think as long as they're not in the, the Pentagon, as we talked about in last week's show.
Keep them away from it.
Yeah, they, you know, there might be some monetary inefficiencies, you know, in between there. But I think they want to do the right thing. And so I think figuring out a way for them to do the right thing is probably doable. Plus, I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of negativity about sex in America, and maybe, you know, doing this might make it a little bit better.
Darn maybe. Puritans ruining the internet. Puritans don't want healthcare. That's why they're all dead.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, I think PR-wise, they might have to deploy some people to make that work. But I think from an expertise point of view, they could use
the people
some
you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
They know how to deal with large numbers of people trying to access a website.
I think you're right. There was one bit in the article where they were talking about how, they've dealt with traffic spikes before, and I think it was funny that one of the what was it, the last big traffic spike was during the government shutdown.
Yeah, there's actually a link within the article to Pornhub had a site they built that had an infographic about server usage during the government shutdown, and it was pretty revealing. DC is a stressful place, so I hear.
I think if there's any indication of a good use for big data, I think that might be it. Well, another kind of repository of big data that the government is unfortunately kind of turning away from is 23andMe.com. A little while ago on the show, we talked about 23andMe. It's one of those kind of DNA testing places. So in this case, you kind of give them a saliva sample, and then they run some amount of genetic profiling on it, and then you get a list back of kind of most likely things that are related to your genome. And they're not, and all of these are just the individual markers from the genes. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're expressed in a, you know, very perfect way or whatever. So, like, some things that they say aren't 100% what might be true or not. But the FDA has apparently come down to say 23andMe can't sell their product anymore because people are using it to make healthcare and medical decisions. And I kind of don't agree with that. I mean, I agree that's what's happening, but I don't agree that that's a bad thing. I mean, I think the way that it works, at least from the way I read it, is that it's giving those people that information, but it's not at all making those things available to anyone bad. I mean, if they were violating privacy, I could see that as being a reason that you'd want to close them down, or at least put some more oversight into how that works. But just the fact of giving people information, I mean, should be a thing.
Definitely. Open availability of facts is a good thing.
Yeah. And so in this case, I mean, I agree, the things that they're trying to derive they're partial at best, right? You're talking about, like, you know, are you going to go to this website and then figure out, oh no, I don't have this risk for cancer, so I'm not going to get cancer. I mean, I think.
Or are you going to go to the site and it's going to say, oh, you have this potential for this kind of cancer, I'm going to give myself self-done elective surgery.
Yeah.
No, you go to a doctor and then they will confirm.
Yeah. I mean, I see this as just one more thing, and it's a commercial application of self-diagnosis. And I don't know. I see it as you get this, and that's one opinion, and it's I mean, unfortunately, that's really all it is. I mean, there are you know, genetic markers that are for X, Y, and Z, but not everything is perfect. I mean, one of the things that in full disclosure, I actually put my DNA onto the site. I went and did the 23andMe thing a while ago, and I thought it was really interesting. You get a bunch of data, but I was using it more. That's an interesting piece of information, and it confirms something I know about myself.
Did it confirm that you're Filipino?
So it actually does to some degree. It says, like, what I mean, there's some really neat interactions. Like, for example, one really cool one is my dad did it, and it sends you mail, you know, if genetic relatives that are close to you do it. And what it does is it sent me a mail and said, oh, someone that's a relative, like, signed up, go click, you know, sign in and click through to see who, you know, more details about them. And so he had not shared his information with me yet, but it comes up and says, hey, this person is potentially related to you, and the potential relationship is father. I mean, that's wow. Pretty good. Like, you know, we did not, you know, confer and, you know, give them any hints that, like, this would be, like, the way that this was going to work. And I'm like, oh, great job, guys. I mean,
yeah,
I guess
even have the same last name.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. Yeah. Anyway, that's for another show. But yeah. Another thing that it says is that I have, muscles that are good for, I have a high proportion of fast twitch muscles that are good for people that are, that want to run, like, marathons or whatever. I have never run a marathon, but I think it's interesting because it's like, oh, well, that's an interesting thing that I can derive from it. I mean, it's still up to the person to do something with that information. I mean, it's not genetic predisposition, you know, at 100% level anything.
It's the interesting thing to me is the people that are raising the concern that, you know, are getting the FDA to look into this and, mm-hmm. you know, come down on them is a health insurance company. They want a cut of the action.
Why am I not surprised? Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably a problem. Right. I mean, I think, health insurance companies don't have a lot of cred with me anyway, at least
no.
But
I think what they need to do is get Mr. DNA to be their spokesman. I may have already said that before, because I don't remember the episode we spoke about this before, but I still think that's true.
Yeah, Mr. DNA should be a thing.
Oh,
And if it turns into dinosaurs walking the earth again, even better.
like, yes, I have fast twitch muscles for running marathons, and I am a genetic relative of a velociraptor. Who knew?
Awesome. Well, I think it's a good time now to kind of transition to the more spoilery portion of the show. And in this kind of piece of the show, what are we talking about?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to go deep into spoilers, but I was one of the many people who contributed to the $300 million opening weekend of The Hunger Games Catching Fire.
Wow. $300 million.
That's worldwide.
Wow.
It was only like 100 and something million domestically, which is like the fourth biggest release ever.
Yeah.
And for a 2D movie, it's not bad.
Oh, yay, it was 2D. Oh, it's not 3D at all.
I don't believe so.
Oh, hooray.
Oh,
Oh, one of the things we didn't talk about last week was that I didn't see Thor in 3D, did you?
I did not.
Yay, 2D. And I don't feel like I missed anything not seeing it in 3D.
Well, apparently some people did see it in 3D, and there was a scene from Captain America at the beginning. Did you get that in your 2D screening?
What?
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
Right?
That's not a thing. You don't do that.
That's not fair.
Oh,
But yeah,
man.
so Catching Fire was a good movie. It was really dark. There was a lot of time spent on setting up the ruling regime as bad guys. They perpetrate a lot of violence on innocent people.
Did you need that much more of motivation to think that was true? I mean,
No, but it was better than scenes of like someone pining over somebody else in a love triangle.
oh, good
Like
point.
they
Good
that
point.
was kept to a minimum. It was more, spoiler alert, seeing Lenny Kravitz get beat to death. That was worth the price of admission.
God.
But
But
yeah,
yeah, I've
dealing there
heard
was
roundly good reviews from it. Someone I knew said that I would really like it just from the point of view of the costuming, which I found a really kind of interesting statement. I'm not sure how I feel about that, but I can appreciate good costumes, so maybe it's worth a look.
I mean, if you like good costuming and introspection about PTSD, then this is the movie for you. It's a movie where there's actually the consequences of the previous movie affected this movie.
That's interesting. Did you read the books?
I did. I read the whole series, and I actually liked this. The first book was my least favorite, and the first movie was not that great. The directing was way better. It's a new director for this one. Francis Lawrence is the director.
Okay.
Less shaky cam work, which was
Oh,
great.
that's yeah, that should be a thing. Less shaky cam should be a thing. I'm not saying shaky cam is inherently bad. I think it can be overused very easily.
Yeah, so there's still two more movies, even though there was only three books. They're
Oh, they
splitting up
did.
the third into two movies,
Yeah, who was
which I
the
can kind of
first?
understand.
Who was the first thing to do that?
Was it Twilight?
Was it Twilight? Was it Twilight or
Or Harry Potter?
I know
I
Harry
think Harry
Potter got
Potter was
right.
first.
One of those for sure. And
But
then, the Hobbit, right?
Yeah, well, we're not even going to get into that. We'll save that for next month. When the
Right,
next one
right.
comes out, we can bitch about
So a cool article that I had read about and I wish I had read it a little closer, but I didn't want to be, spoiled because I kind of do want to either read the books and watch the movies or maybe just watch the movies. But the article was saying that the Hunger Games as a series is good because it takes something that ostensibly looks like, just kind of rah-rah girl power and a love triangle and turning it into let's show that girls can be revolutionaries, which I think is a really interesting kind of push and take on that.
That's accurate. And it's also, you know, as the books go on, it just gets darker and more twisted, and it's pretty brutal.
Well,
which
I
is
think,
great.
I think that's, yeah, I think that's actually good, right? I mean, I think one of the things that they, you know, that you could tell they were trying to do with Harry Potter, for example, is that, you know, people are growing up reading these books as the people are growing up. And so trying to, you know, essentially evolve the story and the nuance with it was something they were trying to do. Although you can't really go, I don't know, I think that fast with it, only because of the age of the folks involved. But I think this might be closer in that sweet spot because you're using that kind of self-discovery and growth and connecting it to like in just a slightly older set. And it seems
It does start with kids killing each other. So that's miles ahead of Harry Potter from the beginning. And that's the lighter portion. It's, oh, it's just kids killing each other. And it gets darker from there. I saw some people in the theater who brought their little kids, and it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
This is not for little kids.
Nah.
Not to say that it's, you know, only for adults, because it is, you know, I think it's PG-13. But
yeah.
I would say it's definitely a 13-13. Not...
Wow. Well, that's good. That actually sounds, that's a good enough review for me. I'm going to have to put it on the list.
I will say the movie it made me think of the most was Empire Strikes Back. Not to say it's anywhere near as good as that. Like, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a pretty good movie. It's not Empire Strikes Back, but if you're going to steal from something, you steal from the best. Like the dark cliffhanger ending. Yeah, no, it's worth a watch.
Interesting, because I feel like the end of Empire Strikes Back, it is dark, but I don't feel necessarily like it was a cliffhanger. You feel that there is some kind of resolution in everyone's kind of okay. I mean, Luke obviously is
what about Han?
Man, but okay, all right. Good point. Good point. Han who shot first, by the way.
Indeed. Well, I'm going to shoot first and put one in the head of this podcast for the evening. Putting it down.
It's been a good show. We'll take it. I think, let's see, next week will be after Thanksgiving, so depending on our relative food comas, we'll see what we do. We may or may not have a guest. We'll see how it goes.
We may or may not have a live episode. I mean, they're all live, but I mean face to face episode.
Yeah, there's potential for some travel between now and then, and we're trying to see if we can wrangle it together. If you are out there and you're listening to the show, please continue supporting the show and stuff. We got a nice tweet from bored Elon Musk. Or not a tweet, but a comment on the show notes, which is nice. If you would like to be on the show, bored Elon Musk or not, let us know. We're always looking for guests and for interesting points of view and things. So find us on Twitter and Facebook and... if you can find us on Google Plus, I'd be very impressed. But but we're around, so yeah. Thanks everyone. You know, let's take our Thanksgiving thanks to say thanks, listeners, for making the show kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm thankful to all the listeners out there. I'm thankful to my wonderful co-host.
Oh, as am I.
Until next time.
All right, see you later, Brendan.